Well, good morning. So growing up, our family had a cat. I don't know if you've had cats, if you had them around in your family, but our cat would kill a bird or a rat. What it would do is it would bring it back to the house and like show it off as a prize. I don't know if you've had a cat who's done that. It's like really proud of itself. It brings it back and shows off all the work that it did getting this bird. It's kind of like someone being proud of a trophy or something, so the cat would bring it home and show it off to us. But one time our cat did this and brought this bird into the house, and the only problem was it wasn't quite dead yet. The cat probably should have worked on it a little bit longer, and it wasn't quite dead. And so the cat sets it down all proud, and then the bird starts flying around the house. Like, it's not really flying all that well, but it's barely making it while it's like bleeding around the house. And we're all frantically trying to catch this bird before we all die of rabies or something. Who knows what might happen? We're all afraid that something might go wrong. So finally, we caught it. I mean, little did that bird know. I mean, it might have been flying around, but it wasn't going to make it out alive, right? I mean, it's bleeding. Who knows how much longer it could have lived? It wasn't going to make it out alive, no matter how hard it tried, no matter how hard it flapped its wings. Amos is a book that has a challenging message for us, and we've been looking at this series called The Heart of God, where we've been examining God's call for the people in the book of Amos. Remember, in Amos, in that time, the people had become very wealthy. Their borders had extended, and so the thought was that because of all this money, the trade routes that they now have, all the money that's flowing in, God must be on their side. Right? I mean, they just assume it has to be that God is on their side, that they are God's chosen because they have been so blessed. But if you want to know what God would look like with skin on, look at the life of Jesus. If you want to know what God's heart is for the world, look at the prophets, especially if you consider yourself to be a religious person, a follower of God. Because the prophets come and they give messages to the people of God, and God tells them, okay, you need to correct this, you need to work on this. The problem during the time of the people of Amos is the people were very, very rich. They forgot to care for the poor, for those in need. And so Amos brings example after example to try and get their attention. Now, one of them is in Amos chapter 5. If you're looking for the book of Amos, find Obadiah and turn left. I'm sure you know right where that is. Amos is toward the back half of the Old Testament in the prophets. Amos chapter 5, verses 1 and 2 says this. Hear this word, Israel, this lament I take up concerning you. Fallen is virgin Israel, never to rise again, deserted in her own land with no one to lift her up. So Amos brings this warning for the people of Israel. And to us, I mean, it looks scary enough. But to them, they would have heard it in a different way. They would have recognized the kind of words that Amos is using here. I mean, we have certain words for certain occasions, right? And if you heard the words, dearly beloved, we are gathered here today. Where are you? Wedding, yeah, it's pretty easy. I'm not like tricking you. I was like, no, not a wedding. I'm not tricking you. If you hear play ball, where are you? Baseball game. How about don't stop believing? A Journey concert, karaoke, a wedding, I guess, dancing. I don't know. There's lots of different places you might hear don't stop believing. Or maybe you're hearing a Journey cover band or something. But certain words mark certain events. You hear a certain word, you know you're at a wedding. You hear certain words, you know you're at a different place. And so the words that Amos says to these people, although for us it's lost in translation, the words that he says would have marked an event as well. The people of Israel gathered there would have recognized the way that he says them, they would have recognized the words that he was saying. You know what those words are? Corbin, if you go back to those again. The words that he says, how he opens up speaking to these people, it's like they opened up their funerals. So Amos sings a song that they would have recognized as the kind of song someone would sing to start a funeral. And scholars think that Amos maybe crashed one of their religious events, one of their festivals, and starts to say this to these people, which is kind of a downer, right? And this festival is turned into a funeral. And he says, fallen is virgin Israel. He speaks of Israel as a young girl with so much hope. But he says, they're fallen. And he starts to do their funeral. He invites them to listen. And I mean, imagine the awkwardness of this scene. Maybe they're trying to worship God, and this guy just stands up in the back and starts saying their funeral rites. It's kind of a weird thing. He's saying, I know, you go through the religious acts, you do the right sacrifices, you show up to the right place at the right time, but your hearts are unchanged. You may look like the picture of health on the outside, but on the inside, you aren't truly following God because your worship is divorced from your life. There's no connection between your life and your worship. So just like that bird that was flying around my house, no matter how much it flapped its wings, it wasn't really alive. And for these people, they look like the picture of health on the outside, but they're dying on the inside. Amos is saying, you may think that you're alive, but spiritually, you're dead. So imagine that. You're at worship and someone just stood up and said that, like talked about a funeral in the midst of a festive occasion. Again, the reason why Amos continues to say this to these people, and Amos just over and over again, is going to bring up these things, going to continue to annoy them. He's going to continue to pester them. And the reason is because they are extremely rich. The problem in Israel is the houses of worship are very, very full. And the pockets of the wealthy are very, very full. But there are many people struggling on the margins. You know, sometimes religion can be bad. It can make us feel like if we do the right things and we are okay with God, but Amos is calling them to something different. And in fact, you recognize kind of the same call in the life of Jesus. I mean, who does Jesus have the most problem with? The religious people. He's always fighting and saying, no, you need to rethink this and think a different way about that. He's always bickering with the religious people, the people that think they have God down. And Amos comes to this group of people who thinks they have God down in the middle of a festival and starts singing their funeral, starts singing about their own demise. He says, you may look healthy on the outside, but spiritually, you're dead. Because the people have failed to recognize the warning signs and actually do anything about it. I mean, have you ever had moments like this? We really do this kind of thing all the time, if we're honest. Maybe not spiritually. But there's a place that I think all of us lie more than anything else. Cameron, or Corbin, if you go to the next slide. The dentist chair. Pretty sure we lie in the dentist chair more than anything because the dentist is like working on your mouth and they have that scary sounding machine that sounds like it could cut your head off, right? It's like, and then they're like, how often do you floss, Brian? You're like, oh, pretty regularly. Like you try and just like say, I floss pretty regularly. And they're like, oh, it doesn't really look like you do. And they are kind of have that scary machine, as I said, in the background, and you're terrified. And then after this moment, you kind of have this, like, come to Jesus moment in a dentist's office where you're like, you know, from this moment on, like, I'm flossing 3 times a day. I'm going to get this together. I haven't been living right, but I'm going to make a change. I'm going to do this. From this moment on, I'm going to be one of those flossing people, and my teeth are going to be so clean, and they're actually going to believe me next time I'm at the dentist's office. I feel like God was kind of convicting me on this personally because I work on my sermons on Thursdays at a seminary, and I was working, and then I went to the bathroom, and there was somebody who was flossing in the bathroom. I was like, what a weird person. Why are you flossing in the bathroom? And then I realized that I had promised my dentist I would do the same thing just like a week and a half before that, and I'd already fallen off the wagon. So we lie, I would say, more than anything at the dentist's office where we're just willing to say whatever just to like get the whole thing over with to make them feel like we're better than we are. This is what the people of Israel were doing. They had symptoms, and God had called them to act differently. God had called them to be different, but they refused to recognize the symptoms. They refused to make a change. In Amos chapter 4, verses 6 through 11, I just won't have the words. I have kind of the things that are mentioned here, but just listen to these words. I gave you empty stomachs in every city and a lack of bread in every town, yet you have not returned to me, declares the Lord. I also withheld rain from you when the harvest was still 3 months away. I sent rain on one town, but withheld it from another. One field had rain, another had none and dried up. People staggered from town to town for water, but did not get enough to drink. Yet you have not returned to me, declares the Lord. Many times I struck your gardens and vineyards, destroying them with blight and mildew. Locusts devoured your fig and olive trees, yet you have not returned to me, declares the Lord. I sent plagues among you as I did to Egypt. I killed your young men with the sword, along with your captured horses. I filled your nostrils with the stench of your camps, yet you have not returned to me, declares the Lord. I overthrew some of you as I overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. You were like a burning stick snatched from the fire, yet you have not returned to me, declares the Lord. So God, in his indictment of these people, mentions famine, drought, destruction of crops, sickness, comparison of the people of Israel to Sodom and Gomorrah. And what's that refrain that comes again and again in that passage? Yet you have not returned to me, declares the Lord. There are all these symptoms, these things that are going wrong in your place. People don't have enough food to eat. People don't have enough water. Crops are being destroyed, yet you have not returned to me. In fact, you continue to worship me, but you don't really worship me. In Deuteronomy chapter 28, there's a list of like the blessings and curses that come with the covenant. And with the covenant that the people have taken, there are these great blessings that are mentioned, but then there are these things that are curses. If they are out, if they're being disobedient with the covenant, these kinds of things will happen. And it's the kind of things that Amos mentions in Amos chapter 4. They should know that relationship with God is not all right. I mean, sometimes people will say, like, do you think God is trying to get my attention? I think God is always trying to get our attention. And it doesn't mean that, like, the bad things that happens in the world, that God is always behind those things. But I know that God uses those things. But will we, as the people of God, listen? Will we check our symptoms? There was a study done of 600,000 people who had heart bypass surgery. And their doctors, after they have this surgery, obviously they give them a list of things like to do, whether it's health, exercise, or different kinds of food to eat. And of those 600,000 people, do you know how many people had continued this life change after 2 years? Someone said zero, a little cynical. Geez, Carrie. It's 10%, only 10% of the 600,000 had actually changed their lives and kept it going. And their doctors had sat them down. They had this really intense surgery, or they could have died on the table, obviously. And then they leave. And after a couple years, their lives aren't really that changed. And we think, how is that possible? But we do this all the time, right? With health things specifically. And we go to a doctor and we say things are going wrong, and then he says, well, what you should do is this, or she says, you really should do this, and you maybe try it for a while, or like me, you get on the flossing bandwagon for a couple weeks. But it's really hard to maintain that change. Or even with financial planning. Manny and I just did Dave Ramsey's financial piece a few months ago. And it's great, you get really excited about doing a financial plan, but if all you do is leave this box in the corner, it's not really going to do that much to help you, right? And you can meet with a financial planner. You can talk about things. You can have a great strategy for your finances. But if you don't actually put those things into practice, if you don't take steps to then carry out this plan that you've now constructed, what's the point? I mean, whether it's health, whether it's finances, no matter what it is. I mean, we commit to working out 3 days a week, but the equipment that we buy just lies there after a little while collecting dust. And why is it that it's so hard for us to like make this plan, not really follow through? I think it's because change is hard for people. We are people of routine and rhythm, and so changes that happen are difficult. There's a quote about organizations. Corbin, if you put that up. Any system will unconsciously conspire to maintain status quo and prevent change. Any system or organization or group is going to try to maintain the status quo and prevent change from happening. Now, why does that happen? I think it's because there's a bunch of people involved in a system or an organization. Because people don't really like change that much. And we don't like to make things different. We don't like to alter our routines. It's hard to do things like lose weight, or it's hard to do things like take the steps to be financially responsible, because it takes work. And it takes repeated action. It takes flossing every day. How often do we really change to see something that we need to do and make that change in our life and let that carry out? I mean, how's your New Year's resolution doing right now? I mean, we're in August. I mean, hopefully someone, if you did one, stuck with it, but it's hard. Change is difficult to do. I think about this when I see something happen on Facebook and they make a change on Facebook and people just act like it's like World War III or something. It's like, I can't find my news feed. Where is it? They just start getting so scared when it's just a simple change. Like, who let you be in charge of Facebook and where the news feed goes? But you try to make a change, and it's hard. A change is important work. And Amos and other prophets came to these people and kept saying, you need to change where your heart is. You need to change the direction of your life. God is not happy with how you're treating other people. You need to make a change. But these people would rather just not listen to Amos. Over and over again, God sent doctors to these people. The prophets, Isaiah, Micah, Hosea, these doctors continue to come, but the people just won't listen. Amos chapter 2, verse 11 and 12 says, I also raised up prophets from among your children and Nazirites from among your youths. Is this not true, people of Israel, declares the Lord? But you have made the Nazirites drink wine and commanded the prophets not to prophesy. God says, I raised up prophets. I brought you people to say, look, like, watch out. The direction of your life, the direction of your spirituality is not going in the right way. Please listen. Please change your direction. But you told prophets not to prophesy. So Amos says to these people who are gathered to worship, you may be walking around, but spiritually, you're dead. And you might have breath in your lungs, but spiritually, you're dead. Because over and over again, God has sent these signs that maybe you should make these changes, and you keep going in the same direction. Now, here's the thing about this. We have so many different doctors and different people in our world that examine our health in other areas. I mean, we have millions and millions of this different variations, eye doctors, foot doctors, gland doctors, we've got it all. But spiritually, we don't really think in these terms, right? We don't really think about, well, are there things that I need to correct and how can I make those changes? And what if you could just be honest about where you are in your faith? And you said, God, 5 years from now, I don't want to struggle with this same thing. Or 5 years from now, I want to know your word better. 5 years from now, I want to have a better prayer life. 5 years from now, I want to serve more in my community. I want to be more of a servant of you. But if those things just remain ideals and not practices, then just like a financial peace box that sits in the corner, just gathers dust and does no good. And I remember the passage where Moses is like having that back and forth conversation with God in front of a burning bush. And Moses is coming up with all of these excuses about why he can't do what God has called him to do. And finally, he says, I'm not a good speaker. I'm not a good public speaker. And that's something when you think about it, I mean, like, he probably has been told that his whole life. I mean, maybe he has a problem talking, or maybe he stood up to do a toast at a wedding and he wasn't very good or something, and something that really isn't your thing, Moses, or whatever. Who knows what it is, but that's something that you pretty much have to be told that you're not good at usually. So Moses has been told that he's not a good speaker, but God comes and he says, I'm going to change your direction. And you may not think you're a very good speaker, but in fact, you are going to be the one who speaks the Ten Commandments to the world. You are going to be the one whose words will change world history. Do you think there's anything in your life, in your faith, that God would want to change in you? And maybe it's time for a spiritual checkup. Corbin, could you go to the next slide? What would change if you were just willing to ask this question? God, what needs to change in my life so I could have a deeper walk with you? So my challenge for you this week is to ask this question, to maybe talk about it with a spouse, or talk about it with someone else if you feel comfortable, but to have a conversation about your spiritual life. Because Amos talks to this group of people and he says, you're all about religious activity, you have a lot of things going on, but in reality, spiritually, you're dead. And what if you were to ask yourself that question, God, is there anything that I can change to have a deeper relationship with you? What if you ask that question? So that's my challenge for you. Find someone to have that conversation with this week, maybe someone that knows you pretty well. So they can maybe say, you know, I mean, I think that someone close to you can be a good mirror to talk about this with your life. But here's the thing. Amos is speaking to a group of people who've just ignored their spiritual health for a long time. And there are things going on and they're just denying all of these symptoms, but they'd really rather not talk about it. They'd really rather not deal with it. They'd rather just be religious than truly have a relationship with God. Let's pray. God, I pray that we would be people who truly seek you, that we would desire a deeper relationship with you, and that 5 years from now we can look back on where we are today and say, praise God, I'm past that. I've moved through that. I have a deeper relationship with my Father because you love us and care for us deeply. And I pray that you would give us all a passion to know you more so that spiritually we could be fully alive, so that we could make a distinct difference in our world, that we could stand for those who are hurting, stand for those who are in need, that we could show this world the way that you love us and care about us. God, help us to make it a priority to have a deep relationship with you and to seek to be vital and alive spiritually. In your son's name I pray.